This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I'm Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Kennedy.
I'm Sean Duffy, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, March 12th, 2024. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. They've been talking about it, and then a group of Congress members did it. They're ordering TikTok's parent company to divest of TikTok or be banned in the United States.
Many, many of those people that use that application don't realize just how exposed their data is. And that was something we've been trying to address for a long time. And this bill finally really goes to the heart of that.
I'm Dave Anthony. Israel's military is getting ready to go into Rafah, something the U.S. warns could not only kill a lot of Palestinian civilians, it may not succeed.
Hamas fighters can escape to other parts of Gaza, where Israeli forces have now withdrawn. And so it creates a scenario of a cat and mouse chase that the Israelis will never be able to complete.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
50-0. That was the vote out of the House Energy and Commerce Committee in favor of legislation that says ByteDance, which is based in Beijing, China, must divest from TikTok or face a ban here in the U.S.
The Chinese Communist Party has no First Amendment right to control TikTok any more than the Soviet Union had a First Amendment right to control ABC and NBC and CBS during the Cold War. As many of you know, TikTok is not merely a social media platform. It is the leading news source for the next generation. And the fact that we're putting the leading news source for the most impressionable minds in our society in the hands of our leading foreign adversary is an act of self-sabotage.
Democratic Congressman Richie Torres stood alongside Republicans and Democrats who approved the bill.
And as a New Yorker who lived through 9/11, I never thought in my wildest nightmares that I would see Osama bin Laden's letter to America trending on TikTok. So if that is not enough of a provocation to effectuate a forced sale of TikTok, I'm not sure what would be. So I'm honored to support this bill.
The Treasury Department's Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. said last year that ByteDance needed to divest, but the administration didn't do anything. Asked late last week what he would do if the bill made it through the Senate, President Biden said,
"If they pass it, I'll sign it."
Last year, TikTok CEO Shou Chu testified before Congress, and he was met with lawmaker after lawmaker who said they did not believe him when he told them China hadn't asked for any American data and they wouldn't give it over even if the Chinese government had asked. Florida Republican Congressman Neil Dunn.
Has ByteDance spied on American citizens?
I don't think the spying is the right way to describe it.
Right.
This is ultimately...
We can differ on this.
Monday, Maine Independent Senator Angus King asked FBI Director Christopher Wray during the Worldwide Threats hearing what the problems are with TikTok.
The first is the data. The second is the algorithm. The third is the software.
But the problem is not TikTok. It's the control by China. If TikTok were divested and owned by an American company or a Belgian company or a British company, we wouldn't have this level of problem. Is that correct?
Correct.
So how did this many Democrats and Republicans come to agree on this matter?
A 50-0 vote doesn't happen overnight. In fact, it took months of work behind the scenes.
Steve Scalise is the House Majority Leader and a Louisiana Republican congressman.
Not only members of the Energy and Commerce Committee, led by Chair Kathy McMorris-Rogers, but really if you go back to the China Task Force that we set up last year, and Mike Gallagher has led that effort, he and his committee have been working on a number of things to confront China and the threats that they pose, both militarily, economically, and from a data standpoint. And so they made a number of recommendations months ago to the other standing committees. And this was one of those recommendations. And so ultimately, Chairman Gallagher started working with Kathy McMorris-Rogers and her members, and they built a bipartisan coalition. And it led to a 50-0 vote. That you're right, caught some people off guard, but for those of us who have been working behind the scenes for months to put this together to confront the threat that China poses, especially to the data of our young people that is all being exposed and vulnerable to the Chinese Communist Party, this is a really, really big win for people who care about data privacy and standing up to China.
And it just goes to show when lawmakers want to get something done, they actually can be like lightning quick about it. Although what you're saying is it wasn't lightning quick at all. We've been working on it for a while. But this bill says ByteDance, you're in Beijing, so you have to divest of TikTok. So be owned by another company, right? Like a forced sale,
yeah,
or we'll make sure Apple and Google can't host you, right?
Right. They can sell to an American company and continue to go forward. So, you know, the idea that it's a ban is not accurate because it just says that the Chinese Communist Party can't have access to this data. So any company that's owned by China, the CCP can literally go and get access to the information from that company. So ByteDance is a Chinese-owned company, and that means that the data that's controlled, which, by the way, is a massive amounts of data that TikTok has on over 170 million people across America, biometric data, a lot of personal data. And I'm sure most users of that application don't realize how vulnerable and exposed their personal data is to the Chinese Communist Party. This bill takes care of that.
Tell me about order of concern, because it sounds like Senator Angus King and Christopher Wray went back and forth Monday at the Worldwide Threats hearing about what exactly the concern was. And it's the vast amount of information. It's also the algorithm. But the chief concern is not necessarily those things. It's that China is in control of it. So if another company had that much data of ours, it might be concerning, but it's not China level concerning.
Yeah. And it really, if you look at the bill, addresses four different countries, you know, China being the most obvious, but also Russia, Iran, and North Korea. So any of those four countries that are national security threats. But here in the case of TikTok, you know, that's the one that most people recognize. And again, it's so widely used by so many people across this country. Many, many of those people that use that application don't realize just how exposed their data is. And that was something we've been trying to address for a long time. And this bill finally really goes to the heart of that.
Okay, so the president says he will sign it if it gets through the Senate. I guess that's not a sure thing. Rand Paul has said banning things based on not liking countries or governments isn't a good idea. Even Lindsey Graham said maybe it's, I think his words were, maybe it's like necessary to protect Americans. But if you could avoid a ban, and I know you're saying this isn't a ban necessarily, but he's saying this level, whatever this is, it'd be a good idea to avoid this. Will it get through the Senate though?
Well, I think in the end they're strong, and I've heard already from a number of senators who were very interested in seeing this bill pass the Senate. So, you know, they're going to have their opportunity. We're going to take up the bill Wednesday in the House floor, and I think you're going to see a good, robust debate and a strong vote. But ultimately, that's going to be up to the Senate. I hope they take it up, have the same kind of debate about this. Understand what the bill does. Like I mentioned earlier, it doesn't ban TikTok, just said it has to be divested to an American owner because of the national security threat posed by what they're doing with your data. And there's a lot of interest on a broader scale of protecting the data of Americans for any kind of application. Look, we've also got a real concern about how a lot of these software developers, and whether it's, you know, the big tech companies, you know, Facebook, Google, all of them, how they discriminate in their algorithms. This bill doesn't get even into that. It's really more the access to the data that the Chinese Communist Party has that we're addressing with this bill. You know, the algorithm issue in general is another debate. You saw Elon Musk confront that when he purchased what was then, when he purchased
Twitter.
Twitter, and finally, you know, renamed it X. It was about turning it back into a free speech platform. And he, by the way, exposed just how much discrimination was going on against conservatives and how much of that still goes on by companies like Facebook and Google and others is a concern that we're going to continue to hammer away at. This is more the direct national security threat that is posed by ByteDance's access to all of that data that they have right now.
Okay, but TikTok says they may take legal action if this gets that far. And a federal judge did block Montana's TikTok ban. I guess the judge accused the state of not protecting consumers, but of targeting China. Could a law from Congress survive like the First Amendment legal scrutiny with the national security argument in a way that maybe a lone state couldn't?
Yeah, and I know Chairman Gallagher and Chair Kathy McMorris Rodgers and all the members of Congress who worked on this bill worked with constitutional lawyers and scholars to address that very issue, because clearly it will be challenged legally. You would expect ByteDance to try to go to the courts to block it. And, you know, all the constitutional experts that we worked with said we absolutely have the legal ability to do this. But of course, it would take an act of Congress. And, you know, the old saying goes, and so that means the bill would have to pass the House and Senate and be signed by the president for this ability to occur.
Congressman, just a couple more for you. What do you tell young people who absolutely love TikTok, but are deeply upset by this? Some of them because they have businesses and their livelihoods are at this point based on their TikTok following. Would they have a case? I know some of them were involved in the Montana challenge. What do you tell people?
A number of things. One, under this bill, ByteDance can still sell to an American company, and I'm sure will. And that means TikTok can still go forward as the application that people use. What's at stake here, and I think what most young people or anybody who uses TikTok would be surprised to learn is just how vulnerable their personal data is. You know, there was a case a few years ago where there were some backdoor loopholes in the application that were allowing TikTok to go into other applications on your phone and get data from things like your contacts, which even if you didn't authorize them to have access to that information, they were able to do it. That alarmed a lot of people, rightfully so. I think if people knew just how vulnerable their personal data was that is on TikTok and accessible by the Chinese Communist Party, they probably have some reservations about all the things that they've uploaded to the application already. That would be protected if this bill passes, and then ultimately you see the divestiture where they sell to an American company where no longer would those threats of your data being sent over to the CCP be valid.
I know there's some interest already. I think Mr. Wonderful said he'd like to buy it. So what do you make, right, though, of former President Trump sounding like now he does not want a TikTok ban? We remember when he did, and again, I apologize. I know you're saying this is not a TikTok ban. This is really a ban on the Chinese, on a Chinese company owning TikTok. But he is, former President Trump is saying no to this, that it'll make Meta's CEO Mark Zuckerberg more powerful. What do you make of this sort of turnaround?
Yeah, what he was concerned about, he's not against the bill. What he said is he doesn't want to make, like you said, Facebook and companies like that more powerful that discriminate against conservatives. This bill doesn't do that, like I mentioned. In fact, it would facilitate a sale to an American company, which would make, in my view, TikTok more powerful, because there are a lot of parents, including myself, who don't allow their children to download TikTok right now because of the threat to your personal data to the CCP, that once that's removed, once it's an American-owned company, won't have those reservations anymore. And I think you'd see more people using TikTok. So it would make the application more powerful. And as you brought up, when Donald Trump was president, he was involved in trying to help facilitate a sale. I know Microsoft was one of the companies that was trying to buy TikTok. You know, and there were some lawsuits involved back then, but there was no law on the books that required this to happen. And so this gets us closer to that point. And as you could tell from when Donald Trump was president, there were definitely American companies interested in buying TikTok back then. So the idea that it would go away, I don't think is realistic. It's just the CCP just wouldn't have access to your personal data, which is a good thing.
Congressman Steve Scalise, we hope you're doing well. And thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, absolutely. It's great to be with you. Thanks, Jessica.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dana Perino. Join me for my brand new podcast, Perino on Politics. As we analyze the 2024 election cycle, make sure you subscribe to this series on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts, and leave me a rating and review.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Israel's prime minister insists
victory is at hand. Victory is close.
But Benjamin Netanyahu also tells Fox, in order to defeat Hamas, they must take the next step and go after militants in a new area in southern Gaza. And if they don't,
Hamas will reconstitute itself with these four battalions in Rafah, reconquer the Gaza Strip, and do the October 7th massacre over and over and over again.
Of course, that terror attack triggered the war, but President Biden says an Israeli operation in Rafah crosses a red line, warning that Netanyahu could hurt Israel more than help it. The prime minister says,
to the extent that the world thinks that America and Israel are united, that helps the war effort, and it helps our effort to achieve victory and obviously the release of the hostages. To the extent that Hamas believes that there's daylight between us, that doesn't help.
Despite the U.S. opposition to a Rafah offensive, though, the president told MSNBC Saturday night,
the defense of Israel is still critical, so there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have, but there's red lines that if he crosses, and he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead.
You know, the concern is that more than a million civilians are in Rafah after fleeing fighting in other areas, and further complicating things, the holy Muslim month of Ramadan has begun.
Rafah is really the only area of Gaza that has been untouched by the Israeli ground campaign.
Trey Yingst is a Fox News foreign correspondent who's had a front row seat to the war in Tel Aviv, Israel.
It's where Israeli officials say that Hamas leadership, including top officials like Yahya Sinwar and Mohammed Def, are hiding. They also believe that the hostages that were taken into Gaza on October 7th, those who remain, 134 people are being held in that southernmost city. The Americans are telling the Israelis, don't go in, look for a diplomatic solution.
Trey, there is no diplomatic solution, right? We had one ceasefire. There were hostages freed, some Palestinian prisoners freed. The fighting stopped for a while, but they can't seem to work that out again.
This was sort of used as a backstop in the conversations that were taking place, that a deal would have to get together before the start of Ramadan. Well, Ramadan is underway. There's no deal in place. And it appears that the diplomatic efforts are falling apart. You even have Israel's intelligence agencies like the Mossad putting out statements, very rare statements because they are normally quite private in their operations, saying that Hamas is not interested in a ceasefire. They're not interested in a hostage deal. They would like to ignite the region during Ramadan. And so the Israelis are making a calculation of their own, saying that it makes sense to put military pressure because from their view, they believe it has worked so far in the campaign against Hamas inside Gaza. And the Americans are in part rightly noting that there is no way to completely destroy Hamas in the Strip. Even if they enter the southernmost city of Rafah, it will be too dangerous to enter the tunnel network beneath the city because that's where the hostages are believed to be held. And they could be killed if an operation like that were to take place. And even if they are successful in wiping out the Hamas battalions that still exist, an estimated four above ground, Hamas fighters can escape to other parts of Gaza, where Israeli forces have now withdrawn. And so it creates a scenario of a cat and mouse chase that the Israelis will never be able to complete. And the Americans are telling them, slow things down, work to continue efforts on the diplomatic front, and don't go into Rafah.
The 30,000 deaths that the health ministry in Gaza says have taken place during this war, how many of them are militants slash terrorists, and how many of them are civilians? Do we have a good breakdown of this?
We don't have a good breakdown. Both sides are using different numbers, and there is simply no way to confirm exactly how many people have been killed. The Palestinian-run health ministry that is overseen traditionally by Hamas, but at this point really isn't overseen by anyone because all social services have broken down inside the Strip. It is chaos amid this war inside Gaza. They say around 30,000 people have been killed, and they do not make a distinction between Hamas militants and civilians. With that said, we know that thousands of civilians have been killed. This includes non-combatants, women, children, innocent people. Among that number, whatever the number is, there are also thousands of Hamas fighters that are waging an active conflict against Israeli forces that are operating inside Gaza. Now, on the flip side, the Israelis say that the death toll right now is a ratio of around 1 to 1. They say for every militant that's been killed, and they estimate around 13,000 of them have been killed, that one civilian died in the process. That is probably underselling the reality on the ground. The destruction, as we've seen with our own eyes and our cameras have captured when we've entered the Gaza Strip with the military, is widespread. It's catastrophic. You can smell the bodies under the rubble. They have no way of really confirming the exact number of people killed. And to go one step further, at this point, they have no way to even confirm the specific identities of the militants that they have gone after. They went after the number 3 person in Hamas over the weekend, and we understand that, according to Israeli media, they've not yet been able to confirm if the strikes actually killed this man, Marwan Issa, because they can't get into the tunnel, into the rubble where they were striking.
You spoke about Ramadan. What is it traditionally? How do Muslims typically observe it, and what would it be like now for them in Gaza to do it?
So for Palestinians in Gaza, this is a very sad Ramadan. It's a Ramadan where they are mourning rather than celebrating. And that is not just the sentiment inside the Strip. It's also in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem, where traditionally there would be lights and a celebratory mood. This year, it's not like that. And there is concern that, as we've seen in the past, when Friday prayer takes place, that it will erupt into violence between Israeli security forces that operate in East Jerusalem at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and Muslim worshipers that are gathered there. We have been there in the Old City when these clashes erupt, and they often start out small and they lead to a broader spark, which in the past has led to rocket fire from Gaza. Now, the majority of the rocket infrastructure has been destroyed, and while you may see rockets here or there, the ability for factions like Hamas and Islamic Jihad to target major population centers has diminished greatly since the war began. There are also other threats, though, against Israel from places like Yemen with Iran-backed Houthi rebels, along the northern border where we see continuous fire each and every day, rockets and drones being launched by the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah. And then, of course, Iran-backed Iraqi and Syrian Shia militias.
Now, I know during Ramadan, there is a fast from dawn to dusk, then there would be a feast. But there's no feasting in Gaza, right? I mean, a lot of people, if they get a meal a day, they're probably fortunate. Is that right?
Correct. And we've seen a few images from the southernmost city of Rafah, and Palestinians are trying to make do with what they have, some canned goods that they were able to get from aid trucks or from some of the very, very small markets that are still operating in the southern part of the Strip. In the north, many people are relying on the few trucks, sometimes less than a dozen a day, that are able to make it in recent days to the northern part of the Strip. And then, of course, these airdrops that the Americans have been participating in, where they're actually dropping MREs to the Palestinian civilians that are in desperate need of aid. And so, like you've noted, traditionally there would be large feasts for the Palestinian people. In the past, we've been there actually during Ramadan reporting in Gaza, and they would have things like chicken and lamb and rice. This year, they have whatever they can to survive and get by. But yet still, given how devout most of the Gazan population is, they will participate in the fast, and they will break the fast even if they only have small bits of food to do it with.
The UN has been warning for months the humanitarian crisis keeps getting worse for Palestinian civilians. With so many hungry, it's almost a famine now in Gaza. Officials there claim at least 20 children have died of malnutrition or dehydration, and getting aid in has been difficult at times. So President Biden said in last week's State of the Union address,
I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the coast of Gaza that can receive large shipments carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters.
So when would that be ready?
We don't know the exact timeline, and already the information about it is starting to trickle in, There are reports that indicate 1,000 American forces will participate in the broader efforts to get this together. And so they will do so with, according to reports, the security assurance of the Israelis. And so this will be a pier that will allow ships to come from Cyprus after receiving a security screening and drop off aid at what has been described as a floating dock to get to the Palestinians in the northern part of the strip. And the hope here is that it will alleviate the pressure of these trucks to get from the south of Gaza to the north, knowing that a lot of the infrastructure and the roads have been destroyed inside Gaza amid the past 5 months of war.
Now, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, he said when he was on Fox and Friends on Monday that he has broad support of the Israeli people for this victory over Hamas that they have to achieve. Is that accurate?
The Prime Minister's description of his support in Israel versus the reality of his support on the ground are two different things. And there is a lot of frustration in the way that this conflict has been handled, in the intelligence failures that led to the October 7th massacre, and the ability of the Prime Minister to act diplomatically to reach an agreement that would avoid the deaths of the remaining hostages inside Gaza. And so each and every week there are demonstrations now against the Prime Minister and his government. And there are also calls from the families of those being held hostage in Gaza to implement a ceasefire agreement at all costs. And so he has support to operate against Hamas and ensure the security of Israel. That has been something that politicians, Netanyahu included, have based their careers and campaigns on. But the way that he will conduct that mission will continue to be controversial to a portion of the Israeli population. And given what's at stake here, the lives of so many Israelis, he will be under a microscope in the way that he operates. With that said, when this conflict is over, there's an understanding in Israel that many people will have to answer for what went wrong. And the ability to push off that judgment day in the Holy Land will only last so long.
Trey Engst, Fox News foreign correspondent based in Tel Aviv. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tommy Lahren.
What's on your mind?
DEI, or Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion-based programs and hiring are a waste of time and money. But just how much? According to a deep dive done by Open the Books, the University of Virginia is spending a whopping $20 million on both DEI employees and their benefits. Yeah, UVA's DEI program has at least 235 employees, including over 80 students, under its banner. The employment comes at a cost of $20 million made up of $15 million in cash compensation and an additional 30% for the annual cost of their benefits. This is an outrageous waste of money and resources. No wonder college tuition is unaffordable. These woke institutions are throwing money around at useless programs and patting themselves on the back for it. Thank goodness Florida Governor Ron DeSantis took an axe to this crap in his state. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at OutKick.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.